Hey everyone, it's Harry. I'm with Kamau. If you hear water going through pipes right now, it's because we've decided to record this in the bathroom because the sound apparently was better, but we forgot that sometimes people flush things. So, you know, we're keeping it real.
Yep, it's Kamau, and I'm the one in the bathroom. We got the only seat, if you know what I mean. We're backstage at the Buskirk Chumley Theater at the Limestone Comedy Festival in Bloomington, Indiana.
We had a really great show tonight. It was so much fun. You're really going to love it. We want to let you know, in case the world ends tomorrow, that this show was recorded on Friday, June 2nd. So that's why we didn't mention the world ending. Okay, let's hear it.
From Topic and Earwolf, this is Politically Reactive. I'm Debbie Kamau Bell.
And I'm walking thirst trap Hari Kondabolu.
The show where two comedians try to make sense of politics in America.
That can definitely happen in an hour and a half. Yes, an hour and a half.
And this is our first live show ever! We are at the Buskirk Chumley Theater in Bloomington, Indiana for the Limestone Comedy Festival, Oprah Boys! We've got a great show tonight. We have three amazing comedians from the Limestone Comedy Festival, Arsh Singh, Sophie Hawkins, and Corinda Dobbins.
And right here from Indiana University, political science professor Jeffrey C. Isaac.
Not Jeffrey J. Isaac.
Not Jeffrey R. Isaac.
Jeffrey C. Isaac. And also we have a special guest appearance from my mom, Janet Cheatham Bell.
It's all coming up on Politically Reactive.
Hello.
Yeah, hello. Good evening. Afternoon.
Yeah, hello. Yeah. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Welcome to the first live episode of me and Hari's podcast, Politically Reactive, and you get to be here. Yay! Yeah.
That is W. Kamau Bell from the United Shades of America on CNN. And I'm the other guy.
Or as some of you know, as the guy who introduces Hari and totally buys clips.
That's less of a laugh there. Well, this is exciting. We're doing our podcast. Some have called it a political podcast because our name is Politically Reactive.
Yes.
I see this more of a friendship podcast. It's two people being friends yelling about things we hate.
Oh, yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, political podcast sounds better.
I'm wearing a Kurt Vonnegut t-shirt today. Kurt Vonnegut, because I'm in Indiana. He's my favorite author. And of course, this best represents Indiana, which of course is a progressive hub that doesn't believe in religion. It is the perfect shirt to wear today.
And I'm wearing my Standing Rock shirt because I'm better than everyone here. we do want to shout out the Limestone Comedy Festival here in Bloomington and the Buskirk Chumley Theater. Give them a round of applause, all those people. Jared is doing the Lord's work with the Limestone Comedy Festival.
So before we go, good job on Mike Pence, everybody. Good job with that. Thank you for your contribution to America. You had a chance. This never would have happened.
If you had just left him on the radio where he belonged. But, I mean, I love the thing about Indiana. They're like,
we're Mike Pence and none the richer. That a decade ago, good, 20 years ago, that joke.
Yeah.
Would have killed.
Yeah. Your millennial audience just went, wait, what? I love the fact that Indiana was like, yay, Mike Pence is gone. Oh, but he's the vice president now. Oh, that didn't work out the way we hoped. It also makes all the impeachment talk really awkward. Get rid of Trump. Oh, wait a second. Then we have an evil villain who actually can think through things logically. That's not going to be work. Then we have an actual evil villain who makes sense. Uh-oh. Who will plan things. I think my favorite recent Mike Pence moment was from February. During the beginning of Black History Month, Mike Pence, your Mike Pence, he tweeted, as Black History Month begins, we remember when President Lincoln submitted the 13th Amendment ending slavery to the states, hashtag National Freedom Day. So to celebrate Black History Month, he remembered the last time a white person did something really nice for a black person. Somebody like, was that the, I mean, really nice. I mean, not like, hey, Lamar, I got your coffee. I mean, actually, really nice.
I like how Republicans always mention Abraham Lincoln being Republican when they want to show, like, you know, we get it, Abe Lincoln. I'm like, that was over 100 years ago, man. That was the last time they did something positive.
That's that was the last time. Yes. It got tight in here. All right.
You all know that it's over, right? The whole slavery? Okay. I'm not sure if it just got here, the news.
Technically, no. Lincoln only freed the slaves in the southern states. So possibly here, maybe.
Indiana was on the fence, though, weren't they? They weren't sure.
Here's my favorite thing about Indiana. And full disclosure, I lived in Indianapolis as a kid. My mom's from Indianapolis. So when I talk about Indiana, I know what I'm talking about. My favorite thing that sort of tells you about Indiana is that you guys, for some reason, think you're in the Eastern time zone. Isn't that adorable? Isn't that adorable?
Oh, that's adorable.
So when I call my mom from California, she's 3 hours ahead, even though she's, 4 hours from Chicago? What are you doing, Indiana? Like, you guys should probably be on mountain time, if I'm serious.
Do you know what my favorite thing about Indiana is? The Indianapolis Pacers.
Oh, boy. Oh, Jesus.
Look, the name wrong intentionally.
First of all, you screwed up. We're in Bloomington. The cheat move would be, you know what my favorite thing about Indiana is?
What?
The Indiana Hoosiers basketball team! You totally screwed up.
Well, okay, let me try it again. All right, I'll do it with more fervor this time, okay? I didn't finish my sentence either. So
okay.
My favorite thing about Indiana is the Indiana Pacers!
Nope. Dude!
Losing to the New York Knicks in the 90s. Let's keep going. Let's move forward. Let's move forward.
Oh, you know how to win them not over. Well, we do have a great show this evening. We have some amazing guests. We have, as we said, we have comedian Corinda Dobbins, Arish Singh, Sophie Hughes. Give them a round of applause. And we also have Professor Jeffrey C. Isaac from Indiana University, university nearby.
Yes.
But before we're going to bring him out in a second. Before we do that, how's your underwear situation going?
Man, I love the underwear I am currently wearing right now. How is your underwear, Kamau?
Are you referring to me undies? I love me undies.
Man, me undies make my testicles feel great.
Was there an issue with your testicles before, Hari?
For years, I felt my testicles were getting a little too much room or not enough room at all.
Oh, but then what happened?
I tried MeUndies, and I felt like, wow, this is perfect for my testicles and for my potential future children.
Oh.
Wink.
Wink. What about people without testicles? Can they wear MeUndies?
Anyone can wear MeUndies. That's the great thing about MeUndies. They're not just sold to particular genders or no gender. They're sold to everybody, unlike some other underwear companies.
Looking at you, Hanes. Don't really know if that's true. All right. Just know that MeUndies advertise. The funny thing about this, they haven't even paid us for this ad. We just both realized we were both wearing MeUndies. That's what's happening.
It is something. Which one did you wear?
Oh, I got the...
I didn't think I'd give myself a wedgie in front of an audience, but I got the Panda Bears one.
Panda Bear. I got the confetti
I wore
one.
That one yesterday. I mean, my... but, like...
Everybody, welcome to Politically Reactive! I don't know how the MeUndies people are going to feel about that promo, even because they didn't pay for it, but it also was kind of ridiculous.
It was honest. They've never felt more comfortable.
This is my favorite product that we advertise, because this is like the other. Sometimes I always use the products. However, this one, when it shows up, I'm like, thank you. The future has been promised, has been delivered to me. Underwear in the mail.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I have underwear that is a lot older than my 6-year-old daughter. A lot older.
Yeah, that's how I knew that, I've gotten to a certain age, because I saw underwear in the mail, and I'm like, is it my birthday? This is amazing. Polka dots.
Yeah. Segway. Our first guest tonight is Jeffrey C. Isaac, a professor of political science at Indiana University. What will we ever talk to him about? He was the editor-in-chief of Perspectives on Politics. He has published 4 books and edited 2 anthologies. His writing has been featured in The Washington Post, The Nation, and Dissent magazine.
And also, like, you might be thinking, oh, you got some wonk. He has no personality. He seems like a boring academic. No, he also is a jazz pianist who plays locally with the Postmodern Jazz Quartet. So...
Please give it up for Professor Jeffrey C. Isaac.
May I just say for the listeners at home, you look like a hip professor.
A what?
A hip professor. Like, you look cool. You're wearing jeans. No undershirt, which I respect. As a man who is also amply endowed with chest hair, I feel like only the coolest professors could pull that off. Or people with tenure.
Perhaps. I do have tenure.
So you're saying the moment he got tenure, he was like, undershirts out.
No, some, I usually just wear an undershirt, actually. But whatever.
Okay, well, he's dressed up for us. Thank you. So you, I would imagine as a professor of political science that, you know, you're probably being asked a lot of the same questions that we're being asked about. Is this the best time to be a professor for political science or the worst time? There we go, the sigh. That's called the liberal progressive sigh. But when you ask any questions about Trump, they have to go, all right, here we go.
I think it's an awful time to be a human being. And, wow. Most political scientists are human beings. not all, but most. And I often think of myself as one. So it's bad.
It's bad.
Yeah, it's depressing, disturbing. I have many sleepless nights. It's not good.
Well, as a professor, what grade would you give President Trump so far?
Oh, please. You know, MSNBC...
So, perfect.
You know, there's a... WFHB has a local radio show with Michael Glab, and he interviewed me a few weeks ago. And we spent a good part of the interview discussing how it is as a professor that I can call Donald Trump a prick so often, as I do on Facebook often. Is it okay that I said that? Yes, it's okay.
Yes,
whatever.
Yes. We talked about our underwear. We're good.
So MSNBC, which, with the exception of Greta Van Susteren and a few other people, actually that's the TV cable news channel that I like to watch. But they have this really awful thing that's constantly coming across the screen. How would you rate Donald Trump's performance, which really I find that bothers me because, like, it doesn't even deserve a rating. Mm-hmm. I mean, the notion that it can be subjected to some kind of rational criteria of evaluation, like rated from 1 to 7, it's just like totally fucked.
So the answer is banana.
So go on. Talk to me.
On June 1st, President Trump announced that he was pulling the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accord. I wish his father pulled out. The land...
Yeah, don't miss that joke, everybody.
That's a good one. That's a great joke.
They were too busy booing to hear, wait a second.
Melania, if you're listening to this, make sure Barron doesn't hear that, okay? Because he might feel bad that he was born. The landmark pact...
I think Melania is really much misunderstood and maligned. And
are you talking about her accent? Because my parents are immigrants too, sir.
We're all immigrants. Go on. Sorry to interrupt.
So yeah. Awkward with my Standing Rock Native shirt on to hear we're all immigrants. Yes.
I mean, so what does this mean that he is pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord? What does the Paris Climate Accord entail, and what does this do for our international reputation? Or what is left of it?
So the accords were signed by virtually every country in the world. It was a voluntary agreement among most of the countries organized under the auspices of the UN to cut carbon emissions, promote green sources of energy, and prevent the temperature of the Earth from rising to a point that would be probably catastrophic for the future of life on this planet.
Witchcraft.
So it was a voluntary agreement. Trump described it as draconian in his awful little speech in which he explained why he backed out of it. But in fact, it requires nobody to do anything. It's completely kind of a symbolic commitment to working together with other countries to deal with climate change. So what it means on the one hand is symbolically, Trump is saying, giving a middle finger to the entire world, which he often does. And I think that the aspect of it that involves Trump's awful personhood, personality, and the meanness that he represents as a public figure, this should not be underestimated. So the New York Times ran a piece today saying that this is the biggest gift that Donald Trump could have given to China. Trump says China. So symbolically, it means, in general, a dissing of the world. It also means symbolically a statement that the Trump administration is committed to climate change denial, and it's perfectly consistent with a range of other things that Trump has done and is doing to free the fossil fuel industry in this country from any regulations and to despoil the environment and ruin the future for all of us.
Wait, so when you say almost every country, like, so what countries does that include? Like every country?
Yes, literally every nation state that belongs to the United Nations except for Syria. I believe Nicaragua.
Yeah, Syria, Nicaragua, the
and,
two.
And the U.S., yeah.
And from what I understand, Syria isn't a member because they got a lot going on right now.
They do, yes.
They're sort of like, we don't have time. It's like when you get an email. I don't got time right now. I'm in the middle of a lot of shit. I'll get to this later. That's where Syria's at. But Nicaragua, from what I understand, is that they felt like it didn't go far enough.
Yeah. That's so probably, well, look.
The Berkeley of the United Nations, apparently. I'm sorry, the Bloomington of the United Nations.
It's good.
Good save.
I also appreciate a good pandering.
Thank you. Thank you.
So what else would you like to know?
Well, Grandpa, I would... what else is going to happen now? Are we safe? Is there a way for us, the common people, to get to Mars? Is there another way out?
You know, yesterday on NPR, they had the chief executive officer of Mars Corporation. Mars, you know, that makes candy?
Yes,
and
yes.
Mars bars and whatever. Yes. He was on talking about why it is that his company supports the Paris Accords and why so many, really a great many American corporations, multinational corporations, interestingly, support these accords. And I think obviously there are certain corporations that are against it.
I've seen the list up on all the cable channels of all the different companies that support the Paris Accords. And that's the thing that's so striking to me, that Trump, the businessman, is actually choosing against business.
Yes.
Like he'd rather be crazy than a capitalist.
Yes.
Like, although, he'd rather be like a B-level James Bond villain than the businessman he promised America he was going to be.
He is screwing many, many, many businesses, but not his own businesses. So,
yes.
So to that extent, he's managing to be independent of kind of most capitalists and at the same time line his pockets and those of his family.
I was thinking about this yesterday. I kind of blame Barack Obama about Trump pulling out for this reason. If Barack Obama had just taken the hit and yesterday morning said, I'm 100% against the Paris Accord, Trump would have been like, okay, then we're staying in. We're definitely staying in. If he had just taken the hit, we would be fine right now.
That's like from your parenting experience.
Exactly. It's reverse psychology. Exactly.
I mean, I think it's also kind of strange because, like, he has this big white supremacist base, Trump does. And, you know, if the environment goes to hell, you know, white people are going to take the biggest hit with that sun. So I just don't. I don't understand what he's thinking. So I guess thanks.
Do you think, here's another big picture Trump question, do you think he lasts 4 years?
Well, and by lasting 4 years, we mean like being removed through impeachment or some other proceedings that do not involve violence.
I don't.
Government?
I think that the greatest chance of him not lasting 4 years is either if he quits because the job has gotten too hard for him. It's already taking its toll. Seriously, he's decompensating in public. I mean, he's in very bad shape physically and mentally.
You sound like a Trump speech. He's in very bad shape. It's sad. It's sad.
I'm concerned. But that he drops dead. Seriously, man.
No, you mean like he's a 70-year-old man who's not eating healthily. He's not, he's the only president we've never even seen pretend to jog.
So seriously, I think that's the most likely scenario whereby he leaves. No matter how bad it gets, and I think it could get very bad, I don't think that unless the Democrats retake the House in 2018, the House of Representatives, as it's currently organized, will never impeach him. There are too many Republicans. The Republican leadership is just in with him. It's kind of pathetic. And I think in some ways bizarre, but they are. So I don't think impeachment.
Don't you think there's a chance that, like, because I've seen this happen already with like the dude from Utah, Jason Chaffetz. He's like, I'm not coming back. Like, people are just tired of going back to like home to like town hall meetings and getting yelled at. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
that Republicans will just, that there's a chance that some of them might flip for that reason.
I mean, they always succeeded based on like apathy.
Yes.
Right? Like, there's no one who's going to complain. There's no one who's going to say anything. People are apathetic or ignorant of what's happening. So we get reelected every time. And now that, oh my God, people are informed. They're actually using democracy. This is the worst thing for democracy.
You know, the 9th district here in Indiana is a potentially vulnerable district. And the local Democratic Party and a lot of activists connected are doing lots of really important things now, hopefully to lay the foundation for a really, really strong contest in this race in 2018. And I think it's, and so everyone here, like, I assume you're here, like, laughing when I call Trump a prick and, like, hanging out here because you're not too happy with Trumpism. It's important to pay attention to what's going on here locally. And I believe 63 mayors, including the mayors of every major city in the United States, and also the mayors of some like fantastic cities that we think of as being major, like Bloomington, recently signed a statement pledging to do everything within their powers in the organization of kind of city public policy to be consistent with the Paris Accords. A number of governors, including Governor Cuomo in New York and Governor Jerry Brown in California, have also announced a coalition. There's going to be a lot of pushback on this, and I think it's very promising. And this is one of those areas where I think Trump is doing something so symbolically as well as practically bad that it might actually energize people to resist.
Everybody, thank you for taking time to speak. Give it up for Professor Isaac, everybody. Professor Jeffrey Isaac.
We're done? Come on, man.
I mean,
come on.
We're not done.
We're done, Matt. We're just through.
No, we're
through.
Not done.
I'm through.
And we talked about this. We can bring out another chair if you want to stay through the next segment.
I'll just stay in this chair. How about?
Well, that would, I mean, it seems okay. Like there's other people who, I mean, we can,
well, some,
you can stay in that chair.
No, I don't want to. It's okay, man.
I mean, I know, you know, but sometimes from the last 8 years before this, the white guy has to move. And I think that's okay. Sometimes it's okay for somebody else to take the chair.
And as a matter of principle, I agree with that.
But as a matter of ego.
And as a matter of practice, this white guy's not moving now.
Wow. All right.
All right. Okay, you know what? I'm moving. But it's not because I'm a white guy. It's because I'm a nice guy.
Whatever you need to tell yourself. Give it up for Jeffrey Isaac! Thank you!
We'll be right back after we take care of some business. And some business.
All right. Back to the show.
All right, it's time for us to bring some fellow comedians to the stage. Our first guest is open for Dave Chappelle, Trevor Noah, and me. Bitch Magazine said she's one of 6 hilarious female comedians you don't know yet, but sure. Please welcome one of our favorite comedians and my friend, Corinda Dobbins. We had to put a black lady in the white guy chair just to sort of balance it out.
Yeah, he kept it warm, too. It's nice. It's cozy.
That's so funny for so many reasons. Our next guest is a Chicago-based comedian, writer, and activist. He made the news last year for being kicked out of a Trump rally. He's just started a new comedy show in Chicago called Monkey Wrench. Please welcome Arish Singh.
So,
our last guest is a comic that we just met last night. She actually opened for me here at the show that I did last night. And her comedic talents have taken her all the way to performing at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. All the way from Boise, Idaho. Please welcome Sophie Hughes, everybody.
Thank you.
I think so. Our first question is for Arish because we're both brown. I think it's important to be open and honest. Yeah.
Full disclosure.
First of all, I think when people see you, they might think, "Oh, you're a Sikh," but Sikh is not actually how it's pronounced, right?
I mean, both pronunciations are okay. Sikh is kind of more traditional in the U.S. It's closer to what it is in Punjabi. Sikh is very common in Britain, so that's where some of the confusion
comes
in.
But you prefer Sikh?
Yeah, and I the Sikh Coalition, which is an activist kind of group here in the U.S. They're sort of writing guidelines to help journalists with this now. So I wanted to just bring it up. So.
I mean, I deal with that too, because I'm a Hindu, but in America it's commonly pronounced Muslim.
Yeah.
So it's very...
So it's also a very...
You get that too?
I get a little of that, yeah.
Sick also gets... Yeah, it's weird.
Well, it's funny because me and Corinne have a similar problem. We're both black, but it's commonly pronounced nigger. So it's weird.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
I knew. I was like, I'm sorry I had to involve you in that, Corinne.
So Arsh, last election, you were kicked out of a Trump rally. So how did that happen? what gave it away that you might not be a Trump supporter? Was it the turban? Was it the beard? Was it what?
Well, I thought it would just be a thing where, at that time, a few weeks before, there was an activist, Rose Hamid, who did the sort of, she had a gold star. She was a Muslim activist, was doing this with her husband also, who I think is has a Jewish faith as his background. I just thought at that time people needed to be putting out a message, being active. I didn't actually think it would catch on. I thought it would be like in the local paper and stuff like that. So that's... that's just the background I have. You have to be active against these kind. You have to stand up against it. And I was familiar with that region. I used to be a journalist out there, so I knew their security wasn't that great. So we figured out how to do it. You know, it's just.
Did they politely ask you to leave?
No, they shoved me out, and I shoved back a little bit. If you see the video, but that's how it was.
Did they mispronounce sick as well?
You know, I think I did hear it slightly mispronounced.
So, Corinda, I know you. We both live in the Bay Area.
Yes.
And I know you're a very politically active person. You speak truth to power. So what are you thinking about as we go through this Trump era? What's on your mind? There he goes. That's the liberal progressive sigh, as we talked about earlier, yes.
I mean, so many things. I think particularly as a black woman, I think, Black Lives Matter is very prominent. I mean, it was created by black women. And, one of the things that Trump is doing or has done is sort of done all these things with these funding with cities and trying to bring all this paramilitary equipment into cities to just stop people from protesting and from getting out in the streets and doing what you're supposed to do in America, which is, fight back when you think things are wrong. So I think, and the thing I really noticed is because I went to the Women's March and there was nothing there. It was like the police had on like pussy hats. I mean, it was like, it was a very different presence. And it's like, as when black people show up, it's like they almost immediately expect violence. Like we don't even get the benefit of the doubt that we're just going to march.
Is the Women's March, and I know that I was not there, but I saw pictures and talked to people. I know Lisa Garza, who was one of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter, was there. And there was a lot of talk about that. The reason that was is because the Women's March was identified as being a white women's march.
Right.
And it's not a good look for cops to be busting up white women's heads on television, whereas for black people's heads, that's a ratings winner.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a very different just atmosphere. Like, the police were waving at us. At the Women's March. I was at a Black Lives Matter rally in Oakland, and they weren't waving.
Well, maybe batons on your head,
but they weren't like...
They were like, hi, we think Black Lives Matter too.
Exactly.
We get the nuance of this
different.
Issue.
Yeah.
I remember being at the Women's March in Seattle, and the cops were like, everybody, thank you for doing what you're doing. Please be safe. And I'm like, whoa. White privilege is wild. It is wild.
I mean, we got to bask in it for a little while at the Women's March. I was like, this is nice, actually. It's pretty good.
That's funny.
Have your performances changed at all since Trump won? I think this is a question that all of us have to deal with. Like, have they changed at all since Trump won, your shows?
Oh, absolutely. For the worse. Obviously, I think if you talk about politics at all, I mean, we have to address... what Trump is doing. And so we don't necessarily want to. I mean, because it's pretty depressing and it's kind of hard to make funny. But, I mean, obviously my sets have had to include, some of the things that he's doing. And to be honest, like, it's pretty draining.
Yes. It's like the news is giving you homework assignments.
Yeah, it's like they think comics want this kind of thing because they were like, oh, it makes great comedy. I'm like, I don't want it to be depressed all the time. That doesn't necessarily make great comedy. So it definitely has changed my sets.
I've had to use the phrase, not all white people, a lot more for my own safety. It's just been
hashtag.
So, Sophie, what about you? What are you thinking about in this Trump America as it relates to you?
Well, I'm based out of Boise, Idaho, and Idaho's a pretty red state. I feel like I try not to get super political during my set just because there really is. People get, like, violent about it up there. There's some I don't want to paint a bad picture of Boise. Boise is a very blue city in a very red state.
So it's kind of like the Bloomington of Idaho.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
I feel like there's a
now
pain
they all
here.
Understand. Like, oh, okay.
I feel like
Bloomington, you're one of the most self-centered cities I've ever been in my life. Thank you, sorry.
Just getting the trans thing to go over with them, that's my accomplishment. That's the one. And every once in a while it happens, you know, there'll be a couple of guys that just were giving me the mean mug the whole time until I got on stage, and then afterwards shook my hand, and that feels great. And I feel like if I threw out something about Trump that they, you know, maybe they might not. This is the one thing I feel comfortable to talk about with the trans thing. That's my mission. I'm going to get people to just go, hey, they're a person. Good for them.
That's sort of, it's easier to talk about being trans than it is to talk to criticize Donald Trump.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hold on a second. Need to take a knee. Wow. Oh, America. You had a good run.
I mean, how often are you concerned about your safety when you're traveling?
Traveling quite a bit. Boise itself is okay, but I get out a lot in the Northwest, you know, and I have, you know, when I'm in a major metropolitan, I'm fine. I feel very secure, but I drive a lot of places, and, you know, you never know. You're just in some town that may just be a wide spot in the road, and you got to use a Love's gas station bathroom, and you're just like, this is terrifying. Mm. And, you know, I've had incidents, and it's scary. It can be really scary out there.
What kind of incidents?
Well, it was a Love's gas station bathroom in which I had been using the women's restroom, and a guy came in, and I guess his girlfriend had been in there, and she was upset, and so he wanted to basically kick my ass for using the women's restroom. And I'm trying so hard to apologize. I'm like, I'll wait outside. She can go first. I don't need to be in here at the same time. And he just wouldn't have it. And thankfully, the cashier came in and sort of separated the whole thing. But I mean, it was getting really intense, which is horrible. You know, and I'm.
Well, it's that, and then all of a sudden, like, okay, now go on stage and make people laugh.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like it's like that. You break up that fight. Now, like, I can't even go to the bathroom anymore.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, the bathroom's a huge issue in my life. I'm just constantly worried about bathrooms.
As a cisgender, heterosexual man who's 6'4", 250 pounds, I will pee wherever I want to. You know, it's just... membership has its privileges.
That must be nice.
Garbage cans. Like, I'm tall enough I could just... Here we go.
I remember I had 28 years of peeing anywhere I want to. I gave it up.
Yeah.
Like a fool.
I didn't... I just want to. I've sort of thought recently. Isn't the problem just how bathrooms are designed in general? Like, should we just like I did some research on Wikipedia, and it's like, it's not like the people who invented toilets or bathrooms were thinking about the best way for this to work for humanity.
Yeah.
They were thinking about, how does this work for dudes? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Because why would you invent a thing where, like, you got to put your private parts right up against it to get to, you know what I mean? Like, in a public space. It just, to me, I feel like we just need to sort of have a, like, one of those, like, SpaceX contests, who can design a better bathroom. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I forget the Mars thing. But, yeah.
Nope. I mean, just stalls. I mean, just, it feels like, what is the, I mean, urinals have never made me feel comfortable, you know?
No.
Like, not like MeUndies, which are the best underwear that one could purchase. But it just, why not just stalls? Like, just, what's the, you know, if everyone has stalls, nobody knows anything because nobody needs to know anything, and then you leave.
You know how there's talk about...
wash your hands and then leave.
Wearable tech, like you have clothes that have, like, already wired into your devices.
Mm-hmm.
I just think colostomy bags, just up and down.
Huh. Just, you know, that's the one political issue we will disagree on.
I'm saying, like, designed into the clothing, so you don't have to ever go.
Like, kind of like adult diapers, except...
Yeah, but more all over.
Have you run this by MeUndies? Is that
we may have just lost MeUndies. Let's move on. So this generally, let's talk about what has it been like for everybody to perform as a comedian in the Trump era? Like, as far as, like, have you had people walk out? Have you had people say things? Have you had after shows? Like, what is it just generally? We'll start with Arish. What is it like to be a comedian in the Trump era for you?
It's a difficult, like, in terms of people heckling you, it can be very intense depending on where you're at. I've had people call me terrorist on stage, but then also there's a lot of days where I'm called a terrorist on the street. So it's what it is. You know, it was very difficult to see how politicians just kind of turned away from addressing this Islamophobia that went on all through the 2016 election and after now. I just don't feel they've done enough to address it and stand up for people. Republicans went with it, and they used it mostly for dog whistling, and I don't think Democrats did enough to step up and you know, counter that, or any other party. So that's been very difficult. I also think it can be difficult to figure out what to target exactly, if what you want to talk about. Some people want to talk a lot about Russia and kind of, you know, this right-left Democrats-Republican thing. I'm not always for that. I think we need to consider what the left is about, and trying to do that kind of comedy can be divisive. Even for people who you know, think are left-leaning, they're not always down for that comedy. So, but then that's also the importance of doing comedy at this time, satirizing those kind of problems.
Corinda, what's it like for you to be? I think you talked about a little bit about, like, being on stage. Have you had any... have anybody reacted in a way that was surprising?
Well, you know, I did a show in Marin County, which is a very...
Marin is the John like... Cougar Mellencamp house of California, like where the rich people live. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but you know, it's sort of supposed to be kind of like the old hippies who left.
John
and
Cougar
then,
Mellencamp.
Yeah, and they... You know, I did a show
He's
there.
He's saying Cougar. Yeah, that's how I do it.
Like maybe... 2 weeks before the election, and every comic who tried to do a joke about Trump, they were not happy about it. And that's when I knew he was going to win. I'm like, in Marin? We can't talk about Donald Trump in Marin County?
Yeah.
So that was sort of my wake-up call. Because before that, I was like, there's no way this is happening. And, you know, in the Bay Area, generally talking about Donald Trump is we live in a sort of bubble. Kind of like Bloomington.
Is it like? I guess so. I hadn't thought about it. Yeah, I guess it is.
But I did a show in Sacramento, and this woman wrote a scathing review about
Indianapolis of California. I can do this all day.
She called me a racist. She said that all I did was talk about slavery, which was very curious because I don't have one joke about slavery, but I need to get one. Clearly.
So in her head, it's like, slavery.
Right.
Again.
I was just like, I don't have any jokes about slavery.
So I'm from Detroit. Stop talking about slavery.
We get it already.
I'm a lesbian. There she goes, bringing up slavery again.
It was crazy. So, yeah. You know, you leave outside of the Bay Area and it's, you know, slavery.
Sophie, you talked about this a little bit, but as soon as you've got anything else you want to say about being, specifically being a comic in this era.
Honestly, if I'm being totally truthful, I got so frustrated about a year ago that I just, like, did the ostrich. I put my head in the sand. I was like, it's not happening. I'm not hearing any of it. It's not real. I just, for my own sanity. Yeah. I have this one joke where I don't even get close to a political statement. I'm just referencing presidents. And you can just feel the whole, like, room just tense up the second you get anywhere near it. I don't know. Maybe I'm not being brave enough that I'm not doing those jokes. But you know, I got my brave plate full right now. I don't need seconds.
Yet. Yeah,
I'll get there. That's all.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I don't think anybody's going to be like, I don't think you're really doing a good job of. You're just Boise. Blue dot be damned. All right, give it up for our guests, Corinda Dobbins, Arish Singh, and Sophie Hughes.
Thank you.
And now it's time for a very special guest. Give her all the love you have left in you this afternoon. It's time to bring up to the stage my mom, Janet Cheatham Bell, everybody.
Thank you.
Hi, Ma. In the microphone.
Thank you.
There we go. yeah, you can talk right into it. So, Hari, how's it going, sir?
Good, good. I have a question. I have a question, Janet. Have you told...
Janet, like that? It's like that?
Well,
you
I'm
missed
not
a few
mom.
Things, friend.
Oh, okay.
Janet, have you told Kamau yet that I'm your favorite? It's time he knows. You're laughing so suspiciously.
No, I haven't told him.
Let me translate. That's my mom's way of like, I don't want to hurt your feelings in front of all these people. So, Ma, tell me what how long have you lived in Bloomington now?
It will be 15 years in November.
Wow. How long did you intend to live here?
2 years.
And you have a good community here. I think that's why you're still here, right?
Right. Yeah, I've learned to love it. Now, wait, let me explain that remark. You see, I went to college at Indiana University in the 1950s. Bloomington then was completely unlike Bloomington today. So I want all of you to understand that I was very apprehensive about coming here to live. But a friend of mine said, Janet, it has changed. And so because I loved her and knew what her sentiments were, I took her at her word, and she was right. Bloomington has changed, I'm happy to say.
And I feel like some of that change in the last 15 years is because of you.
Well, I do take full credit for turning Indiana blue in the 2008 election.
I remember you told me that in 2008. The thing I remember you telling me is like, we're turning it blue. I remember you saying, we're turning it blue. That's going to happen. And it did. In 2012, you're like, I'm tired. You guys got to do this.
What was election night like here last November in Bloomington?
This past November?
Uh-huh.
It was like a funeral. Hmm. Yeah, like being at a wake.
Yeah.
Yeah, when your best friend had died.
God, that is a lot sadder than what I expected.
Okay, here's one I know the answer to. This will help us. What was election like night in 2008? Where were you? How did that go down?
Oh, in 2008, I voted early and celebrated in San Francisco.
Yes, we flew you. I flew you out to San Francisco because you'd voted early. I think illegally.
No.
If I'm to believe President Trump, black women aren't allowed to vote legally. So you came out to San Francisco. Do you remember that night?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. The night Obama won?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes, the first time he won, absolutely. That was like, you know, Christmas and Juneteenth. Yeah, all rolled into one, yeah.
Wait a minute. Can you explain what Juneteenth is?
Oh, I thought the way everybody clapped that they knew.
Some of them were like, just like, that sounds like something I should know.
Juneteenth is the day that the people who had been enslaved in Texas found out about the Emancipation Proclamation, which is the executive order that President Lincoln issued to free the people who were enslaved in the southern states. So the slaves in Indiana still were captive.
But they were freed last Tuesday. That was more painful than I thought. I thought people would know I was kidding. They were. I feel like Juneteenth doesn't get enough credit. I feel like I know some black people own it as a holiday. I feel like I do a bad year every year. I'm always like, oh, shit, that's today? I should have a party or something.
I didn't know what Juneteenth was until we met.
Me and you?
Yeah.
Because I was like, happy Juneteenth.
And I was like, happy Juneteenth to you as well, friend.
I feel like that's the holiday black people should be pushing instead of Kwanzaa.
Juneteenth? Well, I just want you to know that here in Bloomington, we have a Juneteenth celebration every year.
Look at you, see? So you obviously said you went to college in 1950. I think we should let people know that and you were like a Doogie Howser kid. You were like 6 years old in college, right? Because you're not that old, right? You're like 55 years old, correct?
No, I was 19 or 20.
Can you tell people how old you are?
He wants everybody to know that I just turned 80.
Good black, don't crack. Good black, show don't crack.
Why are you singing that to me? I mean, I don't have a rhyme for brown, but yeah, we can relate.
Good brown won't let you down. Good brown won't let you down. This is like a throwback to it. This is like a callback to a joke I did 15 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
I just didn't sing it, but it's a better song. Because the punchline is, and good white don't exist. All right, let's keep moving. So a young... That was a young Kamau joke as a premium blend. So as a person who's 80, you've seen a lot of the war, a lot of American history. Does this, you know, so we're talking about like, you know, we just go back in time, like George W. Bush, we're talking about Ronald Reagan, talking about Gerald Ford, I skipped the Clintons.
Richard Nixon.
I'm thinking about the most notable criminals. You know, talking about George Wallace in Alabama, talking about everything that happened in Indiana. Like, you've seen a lot. You know, you grew up talking about separate, like, whites-only drinking fountains and movie theaters with black people that sit upstairs, whereas now black people choose to sit upstairs. So what do you look at this moment in American history right now? Do you see this as somehow different, or is this something we've seen before?
Well, I have to say that I have never seen a president of the United States that scared me as much as Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And like, I lived through Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon. And Nixon, you know, obviously was a crook. I mean, you know, that they've caught him. And I can tell you that before Ronald Reagan was elected president, we did not have hordes of homeless people on the street. Now, some of you are probably not old enough to remember that, but this hordes of homeless people on the street is a new phenomenon. At least it seems new to me. It's been going on for 30 years now, I guess. But no, I was like the woman who was up here earlier who said that, you know, she was losing sleep over Donald. I literally was losing sleep after he was elected. And then finally, I said, Janice, stop watching the news. And so that's what I did. I stopped watching the news.
Except Sunday nights on CNN at 10 o'clock. When your son is on United Chains of America. New episode this Sunday.
I always watch CNN's original series documentaries.
Wow, that's like out of the press release. So if there's anything you could say right now before we let you go to the people of Bloomington, these are your, like, your community, people that you see all the time, people that stare at you in Blooming Foods. That hair is so unique. What would you like to say to this community?
I would like to say that I've enjoyed living in Bloomington. I still do. I mean, I really enjoy living in Bloomington. However, this is not a place to live if you don't own a car. And that is the thing about Bloomington that irritates me the most. However, the people here are so gracious and so kind that they are always offering me rides. And I really appreciate that.
So if you see my mom walking down the street pushing a push cart filled with groceries, give her a fucking ride. Janet Cheatham Bell, everybody. Give it for my mom, Janet Cheatham Bell. And now we're going to do our standard end of the show. It's called What Do We Learn?
We're doing What Do We Learn Today, which, of course, is pre-written for us.
Yes.
Now, So, Kamau, what did you learn today?
I learned that Professor Isaac said that it's a depressing time to be a human being. He thinks Trump is a prick. He doesn't think Trump's performance deserves a rating. There's no rational rating for a prick.
I also learned that he has hella great chest hair, and I appreciate that about him. I also learned that Bloomington audiences are pissed about Trump pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord and did not like my pulled out joke from earlier.
I learned that nobody's into my Shark Tank idea for how to solve going to the bathroom by wearing a complicated system of colostomy bags so you never have to go into the bathroom in public. Nobody's into that idea.
It's like everybody Mr. Wonderful'd you.
Yes, that's true. You said that perfectly.
Yeah. One take. I'm a one take Jake. I learned that Trump is screwing many businesses, just not his.
Yes, yes. Yeah. He's managing to only make sure. Because you can open hotels during climate change.
Right. Yeah. And on Mars, which I do think is the big plan.
Yes, you've talked about that before. Yes. Murray thinks he's just destroying the planet so all the rich people can go to Mars.
Yeah, I mean, look, at some point, Alex Jones has to retire, and I'm ready to take up that mantle, baby. All right, we're all going to Mars. Well, don't you understand?
If you could be the liberal, progressive, cranky Alex Jones.
Who sounds like Doc Brown from Back to the Future. Don't you understand this? Mars.
I learned that Corinda went to the Women's March and was surprised to see police waving and encouraging the women marching that day. It was so different than Ferguson.
I learned that for Sophie, bathrooms are a huge issue and she was nearly assaulted in one, and that Kamau has a gross idea for making peeing easier.
I learned that my mom is awesome on this podcast. And that she is personally responsible for turning Indiana into a blue state in 2008. I also learned that my mom lived through the Nixon and Reagan era and hasn't seen a president scarier than Trump. And I've also learned that people in Bloomington often give my mom rides when she needs to go places. So I thank you, Bloomington, for that. I appreciate that.
And finally, I think that we both learned that Bloomington is by far the most liberal city in Indiana. All right, everybody. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Limestone Comedy Festival. Good night. That's going to do it for our show. Thank you to our amazing guests, Professor Jeffrey C. Isaac, Corinda Dobbins, Ari Shing, and Janet Cheatham Bell, and Sophie Hughes.
Thanks to all of you in the audience at the Limestone Comedy Festival in Bloomington, Indiana. Thanks to the house engineer, David DeSante, and Jake Belzer from Primary Sound Studios. And thanks to organizers here at the Limestone Comedy Festival, Jared Thompson and Matt Alana Martin, and everyone at the Buskirk Chumley Theater.
Politically Reactive is a production of Topic and distributed by Earwolf. Our exec producers are Lisa Liongang, Lital Malad. The show is produced by Max Jacobs over there, Laura Flynn over there, and Erica Moose somewhere out in Spates. The show is engineered by Dan Galucci. Special shout out to Phil Circus. And thanks as always to Brontez Purnell for providing music for the show. Good night, Bloomington.
Thank you and good night.
All right, that was a great show.
Oh, my God. That was some of our best work.
And if you want to connect more with us and see some more of the work we're doing, here's some dates. June 8th, I'll be in Baltimore, Maryland at the Sound Stage doing some stand-up comedy. June 9th at the Arlington Draft House doing some stand-up comedy. June 10th, I'll be in the Norfolk, Virginia at the Attics Theater doing some stand-up comedy. June 16th, I'll be at the Vic Theater in Chicago, Illinois. June 17th, I'll be in Grand Rapids, Michigan at 20 Monroe Live. And June 18th, I'll be at the Detroit, Michigan Fillmore in Detroit doing some stand-up comedy.
And I will be doing the Untitled Kundabolu Brothers Project, the show I do with my brother, Show Kundabolu, June 19th in Boston at Improv Boston, June 27th in Brooklyn at Littlefield, and June 30th in Seattle, at the Theater Off Jackson. And I'll be doing stand-up July 13th through the 15th in Denver at Comedy Works. And there'll be shows in August and September. We got some big dates are coming up. You can get tickets online for San Diego at American Comedy Company, the Philadelphia Helium Comedy Club, and, of course, the Vermont Comedy Club in Burlington. So you can find that out at harrykundabolu.com and, more realistically, Google. Just go to Google.
Yeah, so you can find out more about what we're doing
Also, find out about me at wkamaubell.com. And also, you can pick up Hari's albums, New Material Night Volume 1, and Waiting for 2042.
And Mainstream American Comic.
And, geez, you got a lot of albums.
Huh? And you have one, too, I hear.
That's right. Semi-Prominent Negro. You can get that all at Kill Rock Stars or on the internets. And also, my new book, The Awkward Thoughts of W. Kamau Bell. It's still available. And watch United Shades of America. We got a lot going on, everybody.